credibility. He added that America doesn't need another expensive war to get rid of one strong-armed dictator. The Radio Network News.
John here. I'm running late.
The road to your business meeting is filled with obstacles. Have productive meetings without leaving the office. Present to clients around the globe. Collaborate in real time. Even get instant feedback by taking a live poll. Try it free for 14 days at Microsoft.com/get live. That's Microsoft.com.
At USARadio.com. Dennis Martin reporting. USA Radio Network News.
I've got a pop quiz for you. How well can you do? What's the last magazine you bought at the checkout line? What's the last book your kid checked? Who did your basketball team pick? Name a book in your kid's backpack. Who is President of the United States? Who is President of...
Know what really matters. When you know all about your kid's school, you know all about your kid. Not only will your relationship benefit, so will your kid. When kids have parents, simple ways to get involved. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Thank you for listening to the TalkStar Radio Network. For the finest and informative and interactive talk radio programming, it's the TalkStar Radio Network, available live via your local radio.
And now, from Washington, the...
JimGreenfieldShow.com. So you
and
can,
very funny.
And very funny in his own words. But where...
Yeah, I think it's funny.
Well, you know, it's that makes one of us, Jim, so there you go. We're having a good discussion. One of the things I like about Jim is that because we disagree on so much, we often have really good discussions. And I've been on his program for the last hour having a pure... philosophical, or as pure as you can get in this context, discussion on the merits of a pure capitalist system, which is what Jim favors, versus to Dick Cheney, because then he could afford it. It's all about stratification and understanding your place in society. Poor people, serve your betters, serve the rich, and you can live in Jim Greenfield's world. That's how I see your world, Jim. I trust you don't see it quite in such stark terms.
Well, I say that would be I would say that it wouldn't be unfair to say that's kind of a caricature. I would never describe any of it the way you have. Let me go through what you just said point by point.
Okay.
If you're rich, you deserve it. If you're poor, you deserve to be poor. You characterize that as being my view. I tell you what, I don't really get into the question of what you deserve and what you don't deserve. That's a moral issue. That's a religious question. You know, I leave that between you and your God. I don't know that people who get rich deserve to be rich, and people who are poor deserve to be poor in some kind of a moral sense. If you think that people are not getting their just desserts, then really that is an issue you have to confront your God about. What I do say is that the markets, now the markets say the free market produces a perfect society where everybody is happy and everything is wonderful. What we do say is that the market works pretty well at producing and distributing wealth. And the alternative is not a perfect world. The alternative is not a utopian society. The alternative is a system where the government controls and distributes wealth and allocates resources, which is, for whatever the problems the market has, the problems of a socialist system are much worse. And so I don't claim that it produces some kind of an ideal system where everybody gets what they deserve in a moral sense. Now, as to your next point, that your value is based on what you were paid, I don't think that. I think, you know, there are many things that people might value in life or that might make you valuable in some sense to society other than what your income is. I think that's a very superficial way of looking at it. As to what an inner-city teacher is paid, well, that's a government job. That's not – the inner-city teacher's salary is not really set by the marketplace except in a marginal sense – that the inner city school may have to compete with other prospective employers in order to get that teacher to come to work for them. I think it's a bad example.
Well, I mean, there are lots of schools, and inner city schools.
College. Let me be very clear about this. I do believe that it is an appropriate function of government to fund education. It's really? Not an appropriate function of the federal government because it's not in the it's not authorized by the Constitution. But it is an appropriate function.
Jim, we have to take a break. But I have to say, I don't see how that's consistent with your other views. Why, if the government's not going to help you survive and live, why should they help you learn? It seems to me, Jim, in your pure world where you have sort of a Sparta-like existence, and if you happen to be healthy and rich, you're well off, and if you don't, you die. I don't see why the government should fund education. We'll be back.
The most famous television documentary ever produced was Victory at Sea, which was as noted for the swelling musical score by Richard Rodgers as the amazing footage from World War II gathered from over 13,000 hours of footage from U.S., British, German, and Japanese navies. RetroTelevision.com offers you 26 episodes of Victory at Sea, stunningly reproduced on DVD for just $19.95. The original 26 episodes are presented uncut with every note of Richard Rodgers' original score for just $19.95. To take advantage of this offer, go online to www.RetroTelevision.com. That's R-E-T-R-O, RetroTelevision, you got to spell out television.com. Or go to TalkStarRadio.com to get your set of Victory at Sea episodes for just $19.95.
It will help what's this word?
Take each letter at a time.
Motivate.
Good job.
What's it mean?
Yeah, it means to encourage or, you know, help someone do something better.
Help motivate them to try harder, which can help them become better readers, even faster.
Excellent.
When kids read better, it builds their confidence, and that can make a big difference in a kid's life while they grow up.
You're getting really good.
Thanks, Dan.
Keep going.
For more ideas on how to be a better dad, call 1-800-790-DADS. This has been a message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council.
All right, what do you want to read next?
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. This Debate Tuesday, I am debating with Jim Greenfield, host of the Jim Greenfield Show, which precedes mine on the Talkstar Radio Network for the 2 hours preceding it. You can check that out at thejimgreenfieldshow.com. Excuse me, jimgreenfieldshow.com. And we're talking about generally, I guess, philosophies, capitalism, socialism, and the like. Jim Greenfield admits that the free market is imperfect, but he says it cannot be improved upon. That there's absolutely nothing government can do, I don't think. Tell me if I'm wrong, Jim. There's nothing the government can do to make the free market better. And he says, as to give it a counterexample, he talks about a pure socialist system. Now, I have never supported a pure socialist system. I don't know many who do. The only thing that comes to mind, really, that's even close to that is the Israeli kibbutz, which I think might work on a small scale. But I don't support pure socialism. I do think, though, that social insurance, programs like Social Security, programs like health insurance, help take the risk of living in our society, the risk of making a bad business decision, the risk of being born poor, the risk of getting some awful disease, and help spread it among society. For Jim, as I see his view, it really, that's between you and your maker. If there's two individuals and God has inflicted one of them with some horrible genetic disease and the other person is perfectly healthy, you cannot ask the healthy person to care for the sick person. The sick person is just unlucky. They have a problem with God. They have to die. The healthy person is doing just fine. I don't see a society like that. I see a society where we share our risks, pool our risks, and as both Christianity and Judaism teach, where we love our neighbor as thyself. I actually think the healthy person to care for the sick person. The sick person is just unlucky. They have a problem with God. They have to die. The healthy person is doing just fine. I don't see a society like that. I see a society where we share our risks, pool our risks, and as both Christianity and Judaism teach, where we love our neighbor as thyself, I actually think that a society that cares for one another makes us all feel more comfortable. Because no matter how rich you are, you could lose it all, and you could be needing something one day. And at the end of the day, if you're born rich, That's just lucky. And there's nothing you deserve it to be born in a rich family. You just happen to be a rich baby versus a poor baby. I would like to give every American the equal opportunity to succeed. If you want to call in, by the way, and argue with Jim or me, you're welcome to do so. The toll-free number is 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. And you don't just have to talk about this. A number of you have posted on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com questions about Iraq. We'll get to that, too, I promise. But I know Jim wants to respond to me. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, you made several points here. First of all, in this last segment you asked me, you know, you thought it was inconsistent for me to believe that it's a proper function of government to fund education. Let me be very clear about something, Mark. I am not an advocate. Free market system only works well when there's competition. And if you get a monopoly using unfair trade practices, monopolized, dominating, no, you've got to have the government intervene there. Government has to set the rules, the rules for private property and protect private property rights and establish a court system for resolving disputes and enforcing contract rights and so forth. So government does have a role in making the free market system work. What I don't agree with is the notion that government should be redistributing wealth at gunpoint. And
well, I don't know about gunpoint, but I pay my taxes, and I've never had anyone point a gun at me and require me to pay my taxes. I understand that it's the law. It's a law I supported and I voted for. And
I've decided to stop paying my taxes, and you don't pay them anymore, and then find out.
I support paying taxes. I support funding my society. I support helping the needy. I have no problem paying taxes.
The guns is because you're paying them. You stop paying them, you'll see the guys with the guns. They'll be there.
I have no problem with that. I mean, Jim, if you harm somebody else in society, yeah, they come after you with a gun if you don't pay your taxes. You know, if you go off the road, if you drink and drive, sure, the government punishes you because we as a society have set rules to say how our government works. If I don't want to fund the war in Iraq, and I'll tell you something, Jim, I don't want to fund the war in Iraq, they also come after me with gunpoint. Do you think that's wrong? Because I could make the exact same argument and say, you know what, I don't care to fund ExxonMobil with my tax money. I think that's disgusting and wrong. It's in the energy bill, which the majority of representatives voted for. I think that's incredibly wrong, and I refuse to pay my taxes. They're going to come after me with gunpoint. Well, isn't that, I frankly think that's more awful than coming at me at gunpoint to pay to help educate my neighbor.
Company. I would say, look, if the government is performing functions which benefit everybody, then I would say, I'm not going to object to paying my taxes to support that.
It doesn't benefit me, the war in Iraq.
National defense or
war in Iraq doesn't benefit me one iota.
Police force, which protects everybody from crime. I'd say I'm fine. I don't have a problem about paying tax for that. What I do have a problem about, and I think this is where this is why people see the tax system as oppressive, is when you're taking money from me to give it to somebody else, whether that somebody else is ExxonMobil or a farmer, I'm going to say, sorry, that's my money. Where do you get the right for the government to take it from me to give it to someone else?
Jim, we have to take a break, but you've given us a nice segue, because as far as I'm concerned, the money that I spend on my taxes to go to the war in Iraq doesn't help me one iota. It doesn't help our national defense. All it is, as far as I'm concerned, is a giveaway to the oil companies. So I think it's a great segue to talk about the war in Iraq, and we will do that. Jim Greenfield and your calls at 877-528-8255, 877-528-TALK, right after these messages.
Sleepless nights, agonizing days. Don't let the stress of heavy credit card debt ruin your life or the ability for you to get a good job. Take action. Call Debt Relief of America. They are professional, proven debt negotiators that work for you to get credit card companies to eliminate 50 to 60% of your credit card debt. Credit card companies make it hard for the average American to get out of debt. High Interest Relief of America helps you break free by
how I was going to get out. DRA worked with my credit.
For your free debt relief consultation, there is absolutely no cost or obligation. Call 800-509-5495, 800-509-5495. One call can literally save you thousands of dollars. Not available in all states. 800-509-5495, 800-509-5495.
What do you think of when you see a Shriner? Their unique red hats, their colorful parades? What about helping orthopedic spinal cord and burn medical care to children charge? And they combine that care with innovative.
What some people are saying about your morning with Jim Harrington and friends.
Hello, this is Dr. Evil. I'm listening to Your Morning with Jim Harrington and Friends on my very evil radio. Okay, somebody give me a freaking break here. I don't understand the jokes.
Well, Austin gets them. Your Morning with Jim Harrington and Friends, Monday through Friday, right here.
6 to 10 Eastern Time on the Talkstar Radio Network.
discussing with fellow talk radio host Jim Greenfield, host of the Jim Greenfield Show, the issues of the day, this debate Tuesday. I want to move on to the situation in Iraq. Before we do, I can't resist asking one last question on this general topic of, Willie, what the role of society is. And that is, Jim, let me give you two children, all right? Got to go with two children. They're both 5 years old. One has an awful genetic disease that will cost, oh, say, $10,000 to cure. And actually, they both have the same awful genetic disease. If one kid is rich, comes from a rich family, that they pay for it, the kid's cured. If the kid from a poor family has it and can't get enough charity, and we know there's not enough charity to provide for all these things, if there is no government coverage, they die. Is that a system that you support?
Yes. Now, I know that sounds shocking, but
it sounds
if I could, in a roundabout way, Ira Magaziner and other people in the Clinton administration, when they first actually, it was before Clinton actually took office. It was after he'd been elected. And they were looking at the efficiency of various government programs. Every dollar collected, about 23 cents reached the intended beneficiaries. And so one of the things that they vowed when Clinton came into office is, well, we're going to make this government system work more efficiently. I never heard another word about it after that. They never did make it more efficiently. So you have to understand that if you have the government of taking care of that poor kid who's got that genetic defect, in order to get that $10,000 worth of benefits to him, basically you're going to have to collect about $40,000 worth of taxes.
$40,000. Wait. You're arguing.
Is this the most efficient way to handle the problems of the kid born into a family of poverty who has serious health problems? Is government the best way to handle that?
Well, Jim, I think you couldn't be more wrong on your statistics. You're arguing that it costs four times the amount. My reading, and this is a total another show on healthcare, which we have to have another day, that it costs four times the amount. My reading, and this is a total another show on healthcare, which we have to have another day. But my reading, in fact, is that government is cheaper, that private insurance does quite a markup because there's a hefty middleman between them and the pharmaceutical companies. And if you look at a country like Canada, where they actually use government power to bargain drug prices down, and where they don't have all these insurance middlemen, all they have is the government, that actually the costs are about 1 or 2% rather than about 25%.
Can you explain, Mark, why is it that in the early 1950s, before we crushed our bureaucracies, in the 1950s, 3% of U.S. GDP went to pay for health care? And today,
because healthcare,
the number is 14%.
Healthcare costs have exploded.
They're expecting it to go up to 19%. Now, I'd say that a major part of the reason for that is the massive intervention of government bureaucracy in what used to be a free market system.
Yeah, and all we got for it was higher standards of living, people living longer, and people out of poverty. And I guess for you, that's just not a good thing. I want to move on, though. I want to talk about Iraq.
Well, if you're going to end the discussion characterizing me thinking people living longer, to higher have people living longer despite the fact that the government is spending more money on medical care.
The 60s.
We have less poverty now as a result of welfare reform, which came in 1996.
Actually,
but
if you look at it,
in the 1990s, we had as much poverty as we did in the late 1960s for spending $3 trillion on the so-called war on poverty.
We can argue statistics all day long, but as a kid who grew up in the South, I can tell you that in the 60s and 70s, there were a lot of rural areas that had no electricity, that had kids that were... My mother, not to pick on her, my mother, when she went to school in Mississippi in the 1950s, the great majority of the kids were barefoot. That's how it was. It's not like that anymore. And part of the reason is because of people like Lyndon Johnson, who for all his horrible stuff in Vietnam, which I don't support, his war on poverty brought to rural American kids were barefoot. That's how it was. It's not like that anymore. And part of the reason is because of people like Lyndon Johnson, who for all his horrible stuff in Vietnam, which I don't support, his war on poverty brought to rural America lights and
plumbing. Are you saying Lyndon Johnson paid you to go to Harvard?
Well, I don't know about you personally, Jim, but I do think he definitely helped bring rural America out of the incredible poverty they were in, as did people like Franklin Roosevelt. I'll tell you, I got callers on the line. I got called through. Take a look at West Virginia. Take a look at Mississippi.
As a result, not of the war on poverty, but as a result of welfare reform.
You're absolutely wrong. If you look at the resurgence,
we
got to take another break, and I promise I'll get to your calls afterwards. But if you look at the resurgence of particularly the South, the region I grew up in, which I understand is now a conservative region, if you look at it, it's because of intense government focus on rural poverty. that people have plumbing, people have electricity, people have roads.
This is Newsbreak. The ships at a port in Jordan. Security officials say the storm will probably make landfall north of Miami late Thursday. Venezuela's ambassador to the United States has joined a chorus of critics blasting evangelist Pat Robertson for calling for the S&P's down 50 points, closing at 10,520, NASDAQ off 4 to 2137. More news at usaradio.com.
Would you like to own your own business and enjoy financial independence? For as little as $13,995, Transnet Wireless can show you how to capitalize on the exploding public internet market. There is no technical knowledge required. You get everything you need to own and operate your own business. Call 1-800-928-1475. This amazing Wi-Fi internet is your location. Users without a wireless device can access the internet. Income potential. Call now. Five prime locations are available now. Call 1-800-928-1475.
I'm Joe Graydon, and this is our daily update from the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network. A new study confirms that a low-salt diet can help control blood pressure. Researchers compared an ordinary American diet to a special DASH diet. That stands for Dietary Approaches to Stopping Hypertension. The DASH diet is rich in vegetables, fruits, whole grains, poultry, fish, nuts, and low-fat dairy foods. Over 3 months, the sodium intake was varied, and the scientists found that the lower the sodium, the better the blood pressure.
Controlling cholesterol is crucial in reducing the risk of heart disease. In the past, questions have been raised about whether statins and other cholesterol-lowering drugs are linked to depression and suicide. A study in the archives of internal medicine.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. This is Debate Tuesday, and I am engaged in quite a debate with Jim Greenfield, host of the Jim Greenfield Show, right here on the TalkStar Radio Network. His show is 2 hours before mine. The website is jimshow.com, and you can check out his show every weekday in the 2 hours before mine. And I would hope that you would find something to agree on, either with his show or with my show. But whether you agree or disagree with either of us or both of us, you're always welcome to call in. 877-5. Any topic is valid, not just socialism and capitalism. Any topic you want to raise. We started to move the conversation to Iraq. That's always a fair topic. Let me go to the phones now. And Gordon from Michigan, welcome to the Inside.
I'd just like to know if Jim can give us a definition of what victory is still possible in Iraq.
Great question. Jim?
Well, there are people mostly on the left who are saying that that the war in Iraq is unwinnable. I don't think that's necessarily true. I sure hope it's not true.
How do we know when we've won, Jim?
Well, I don't know how to answer that question. I can tell you this. Mark, I was opposed to the war in Vietnam, and I was opposed to the invasion of Iraq. I think it was I thought it was a mistake at the time. I was on the radio every day arguing against it. I still think it was a mistake.
Wow, however, we agree on that.
That said, I got to say that at this point, we can't afford to lose. This is not like Vietnam. We lost Vietnam, and it didn't do us any harm at all. And in fact, I've said a couple of times, I think maybe it did us some good because we got some good Vietnamese restaurants here as a result of losing the war in Vietnam. And I got to taste Vietnamese food. But if we lose in Iraq, that's not something that's just going to pass without notice. If we lose in Iraq, that means that Islamofascist terrorists akin to Abu Musab al-Zarqawi are going to take over Iraq. They're going to be controlling those billions of dollars of oil revenues. And what do you think they're going to use that money for? They're going to use it to attack and destroy us. So I think that we can't lose in Iraq. We got to fight and make sure we win.
Well, does losing mean leaving? Because it's just a matter of fact that it's not about whether we're going to leave or not. It's about when we're going to leave.
How do you know? I mean, when do we leave, Jim? When do we know we've won? What if we're there 50 years? 50 years, 100 years?
Could that be when?
We've had troops in Germany and Japan for more than 60 years since the end of World War II.
So you would support then a permanent military presence in Iraq if that's
well,
what
I
it takes.
Well, I think that's going to depend on the if we succeed there, that means we succeed in establishing an independent, democratically elected Iraqi government.
And assuming
you
we
can't
don't
stay
succeed
there without their permission.
Assuming we don't succeed in that, because every indication is we're not succeeding in that, then we force our occupation on them. How does it work, Jim?
I would hope. And, you know, I'm not saying that this is what's going to happen. And believe me, I think there are many ways that this war has been conducted that hasn't been very impressive. You know, I could criticize some aspects of the way the war has been administered.
On that, we certainly agree.
But you know, the way I would like to see it work out is that we help the Iraqis to succeed in getting a constitution formed, democratically elected Iraqi governments, get their oil industry up and running, run their own government infrastructure, succeed in creating a successful, stable democracy. And one of the things we're going to have to do is cut off the flow of terrorists and arms across the borders from Iran, Syria, and apparently even from Saudi Arabia. We got to take major steps to stop that and let the Iraqi. We do.
Jim, you're someone.
And I would see, you know, in the long run, if the oil starts flowing and that country starts to prosper. That would be my concept of success, and that would mean that it would help to spread democracy to other areas
okay.
of the Arab world. Flow of terrorists.
Jim, let's say this doesn't happen. So far, that hasn't happened, and it's been a couple years. Let's say it did 5 years from now. Can we leave then, or do we stay and continue to lose American lives and hundreds of billions of dollars in the hope that 50, 100, 200 years from now, it'll finally happen? When would you give up and say, you know what, I'm tired of losing American lives. I'm tired of losing billions of dollars. I, Jim Greenfield, hate to pay taxes anyway. It isn't working. It's time to leave. How many years? 5, 10, 20?
Well, I'm certainly not going to say what policy should be 5 years or 20 years.
But let's say it doesn't happen. Your definition of success, which you've just defined, let's say that doesn't happen 5 years from now. Then do you think it's time to leave?
I'm not going to say what policy should be 5 years from. I don't know what the situation is going to be then. All I can tell you is that right now, look, the way I look at this, Mark, is it has to be understood in the context of what Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda sympathizers, addresses,
right.
some of the money.
Who funds those schools?
Saudi Arabia and
that's
Iran.
Right. That's
and these
right.
schools are training these people that it's their religious duty to kill all infidels, especially Americans and Jews.
Okay.
Now, as long as you've got that kind of a movement with billions of dollars getting funneled
right.
into it and millions of people sympathizing with it and supporting it, and understand that if you look at the countries where Al-Qaeda has been most active, Saudi Arabia, you know, they just arrested some of the top people there, but they were active in Saudi Arabia trying to overthrow the Saudi
Absolutely.
Government. Iraq and Pakistan, where they have nuclear weapons, and they've tried three times to assassinate the President Musharraf. These people are trying to take over Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan.
So I have a crazy idea for you, Jim.
The world's oil supply, and they'll have nuclear weapons, and then they're coming after us.
I have a crazy idea, Jim, and that is that we listen to everything you've just said and focused on Al-Qaeda. Get out of Iraq, which was a fairly stable, if unpleasant, country before we invaded. Get out of Iraq, focus on Afghanistan, focus on Pakistan, focus on forcing Saudi Arabia to close down those madrasas, focus on nuclear proliferation, and that means if we have to talk to North Korea and Iran, then that's what we have to do. Focus on all of those things rather than working on the Iraqi electrical system. To me, that would be a better focus messages.
I know you've heard me talk about
it. And that means if we have to talk to North Korea and Iran, then that's what we have to do. Focus on all of those things rather than working on the Iraqi electrical system. To me, that would be a better focus messages.
I know you've heard me talk about Margie Garrison, the arthritis lady, but have I told you about the time she was thrown out of an arthritis convention for telling the truth that most arthritis sufferers attending that convention didn't need the expensive and maybe dangerous drugs and treatments they were being sold? Man alive, did they hustle her out of there, pronto? This might not work for absolutely everybody, but if you get Mrs. Garrison's program and give it a try for a year and it doesn't end up ending most of your pain, ask for your money back. Look it up for yourself online at healthstarproducts.com. That's H-E-A-L-T-H, healthstarproducts.com. See what the doctors are saying about Mrs. Garrison's program and if this works for you or a member of your family.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is Debate Tuesday, and I'm having debate with Jim Greenfield, host of the Jim Greenfield Show at jimgreenfieldshow.com, which occurs on the Talkstar Radio Network 2 hours before my show in whatever time zone you're in. And we've been talking about, the economy, capitalism, socialism, and just recently we've been talking about Iraq. Now, many have compared the war in Iraq to the war in Vietnam. Jim, and I'm glad to hear this, says that he opposed both. But then he says that, the Vietnam War had some good because we have Vietnamese restaurants. I have a caller on the line who's a Vietnam vet, and I would think that'd be kind of offensive, frankly, to people like him. His name is Gordon. He's from Michigan. Take it away, Gordon.
Well, I would like to make the point that I think the U.S. solutions to Iraq have urgency feeds, and Jim can comment on that.
Go ahead, Jim.
Well, okay, look, first of all, Mark, what you said, and I'll go to what Gordon said also, but, you know, if you had been saying what you said 2.5 years ago, I would totally agree with you. I think it was a major mistake to go into Iraq where you had it. He wasn't,
right.
He wasn't coming after us. So I would have agreed with you if you said, well, and they don't like Zarqawi. They don't like these foreign terrorists coming in there and setting off suicide bombs there. I think they would like to see the United States succeed in helping to create a democracy.
Jim, I don't think they like the terrorists. I agree with you there, but I don't think they like us either. The great majority of Iraqis consider themselves occupied. They want the U.S. to leave. Unemployment is 50 to 65%. Why can't we let them, if necessary, but get our own troops out so it's their battle, not ours?
That should be the goal, and what we have to do is. And I'm not a military expert, Mark. I don't think you are either. But
I'm not.
I agree with you. That should be the goal. The goal should be to strengthen the Iraqi government, the newly elected Iraqi government, help them get a constitutional system going. And as the number of trained Iraqi troops who are competent to fight increases, hopefully the number of American forces there can correspondingly be reduced. And you're right. We should turn it over to them. Although I don't think it's inappropriate for the U.S. forces, as long as they're there, to be used to cut off the flow of terrorists coming in over the borders from Iran and Syria and Saudi Arabia, as I said.
Jim, let me give Gordon the last word. Go ahead, Gordon.
Well, I think the only if we went through that grace period where we couldn't supply basic services for the Iraqi people, and I think that's where we lost the confidence of the Iraqi people. And in that sense, the insurgency is being fed by, shall we say, outside insurgents, and outside terrorists, and the Iraqi people who really don't want U.S. forces there. I think if we withdraw U.S. forces to minimal levels, as we also incorporate also to this Iraqi force, you know, that is probably what we can call peace with honor, as we called in Vietnam. But I think that is already doomed, because how can we really count on the loyalty? And we certainly can't buy the loyalty of this new Iraqi army. I think they're just not to be depended on at all.
Gordon, I want to thank you for your call. I see this very similar to Vietnam. The South Vietnamese didn't like the Viet Cong, but they didn't like us a lot more. I think that's why we lost in Vietnam. Thanks for your call, Gordon. I appreciate it. Let me go now to Alice in Humboldt County. Alice, welcome again to the Inside Scoop.
Okay. Thank you, Mark, for speaking for average people. I think the other side truly doesn't care about most people.
I think you're right. I think they care about the super wealthy. They say, well, if you're rich, you must have deserved it,
yeah,
because that's the way the free market works. And for those that are born poor, well, you know, they just should have been born rich. I mean, to me, when Jim said, you know, if you got a sick poor kid and a sick rich kid, the sick poor kid may just have to die. It's, you know, it's not his fault. He's 5 years old. But, you know, we got rich kids, and they can take their place. It kind of reminds me of that old in fact, it's called the definition of satire in a lot of English classes. That old satire called A Modest Proposal by Jonathan Swift, where he argued that the solution to the poor Irish children was to cook them and eat them to serve the rich English overlords. That would, if the English pay for those poor Irish children, the poor Irish parents will get more money, and the English will get a nice fattening dish, and that will help both of them. And he titled it A Modest Proposal. I understand Jim isn't gone quite that far, but I'm not quite sure where it ends.
To listen to your caricature of me, I'm advocating that poor children who are sick should die, and that maybe it's not that far a step to for you to caricature me as saying that the rich should eat the poor.
Well, look, obviously, I'm not saying you believe that.
Why don't you respond to what I actually say instead of making things up and putting words in my mouth in order to make me look like an ogre?
Well, no, but Jim, you did say that if a poor kid is sick and needs money and can't afford it, that they just have to die, right?
No, I never said that.
You said we gave the example of a poor and a rich kid with a genetic disease.
What I said to you was that the government is not the most effective or efficient institution to deal with those problems, and that private charities can do it much better.
And what if they're not doing it? Do you know that 100 years ago...
Well, they will do it if the government gets out of the way.
That's not how it happened 100 years ago.
The government's doing it.
You know, that's not how it happened 100 years ago. If you read The Jungle by Upton Sinclair, if you read about the turn of the century, if you read about the Great Depression, when you have massive poverty, people aren't caring for them. Look at a country like India, for example, okay, where you have massive, massive poverty, and the rich just aren't covering it. Mexico,
if we're changing back to this topic, we've left Iraq now. We're going back to the.
Alice brought us back.
If we're going back to that, I would recommend a book for you, Mark. Called it's by Alvin Rubushka. It's called From Adam Smith to the Wealth of America, in which he. Documents with irrefutable evidence and logic how wealth is produced by nations. And let me tell you, Mark, it may not come as a surprise to you, but it's not produced by government. Wealth is not produced by government.
I haven't argued for a pure governmental system. I never have.
If you look at the history of nations that have succeeded in creating great wealth, they've all done it by basically following the prescriptions of Adam Smith for a free market system, and there are certain policies you follow, like low taxes, deregulation of business, free trade, a sound monetary policy, a system of private property rights. If you follow those pro-growth policies, you'll produce fabulous wealth.
And I've never argued that the
great wealth. You don't need these government programs to help the poor.
You do because if you have great wealth and it's all by one person at the very top, that's
not
something a society wants. I want to give Alice a chance. Go ahead, Alice.
The average American today has a higher standard of living that is so high.
No thanks to your policies.
They could not have conceived.
That's right.
Of the level of material comfort and prosperity.
Thanks to Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Today. And that wasn't produced by government. It was produced by the free enterprise.
It was produced by Roosevelt and Kennedy and Johnson and Clinton, who took us out of pure capitalism and gave us things like Social Security and Medicare and the Great Society and the war on poverty, so that we've always had wealth in this nation. We always have had Carnegies and Rockefellers, but it is the Democratic Party that helped share that wealth of the Carnegies and Rockefellers to the average American, and I see nothing wrong with that. Alice, I'm going to give you a chance to respond right after the break. We'll be right back.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I can't get the ketchup bottle open.
Here, let me try. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, the television show that America grew up watching, now available on DVD. 20 episodes are yours for just $29.99. That's the money-saving price if you order online from RetroTelevision.com. RetroTelevision.com. Wild Kingdom, featuring Marlon Perkins and all the regular features that made this show a favorite family watching habit. Sorry, phone orders are not available at this low price of $29.99 for 20 episodes. Order this set now and get 3 episodes with famed primate researcher Diana Fossey from Gorillas in the Mist. Order from RetroTelevision.com or go to www.TalkStarRadio.com. Save 25% with the online offering Wild Kingdom from RetroTelevision.com and TalkStar Radio.
Well, AISI, it was NBD.
You don't know what your kids are saying online or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. Help delete online predators. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Well, we only have a few minutes left to conclude this Debate Tuesday, the end of a 2-hour-long debate between myself and Jim Greenfield, host of the Jim Greenfield Show. And it seems to me that Jim Greenfield's ideas, which really is pretty much pure free market, he does believe in antitrust laws, I'm glad to hear, in public schools, but he doesn't believe in things like Social Security, Medicare, Great Society, and so forth. He says that if you're sick and you're poor, you're just going to have to rely on charity, and that should be sufficient. And one of the reasons I'm really glad that Alice of Humboldt County called in is Alice is more than 90 years old, and she's doing fine, her mind is well, she's alert. She is one of the few Americans that can remember the worst economic times in our history, the Great Program. If you could tell us, share with us, some of how things went in the Great Depression and whether or not poor, sick people were taken care of prior to Franklin Delano Roosevelt stepping in.
Well, I have good memories of the Depression. Our family, my dad was the only one really at a steady job, and two of the girls worked in the office, and they took care of the family, and the CCCs were very good for young people.
The CCC being
a WPA.
Right. Now, those, of course, are all New Deal programs, Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal programs. Were you aware before Roosevelt, the time of Hoover in the late 20s, I'm not sure if you remember that time or your parents do, were there long bread lines, were there people that were really suffering?
Oh, I do remember that in Portland. In fact, after I graduated from high school, I went to Portland, and I saw a lot of it, and I remember seeing a man, an Oriental, take a Caucasian girl out for dinner, and I thought, now you see, that was probably the wrong idea, but it really made me feel very bad.
Bad because why? They couldn't afford dinner, or what do you say?
Oh, well, I just thought she was probably selling herself.
Oh, I see.
For the food.
Interesting.
And I'm sure that a lot of them did.
Alice, we have to conclude, and I want to give Jim a quick chance to respond, but thank you very much for your call and for calling into the Inside Scoop. Jim,
have a good day.
You got about a minute. I mean,
Alice was born in 1915, so she would have graduated high school. That would have been around 1932-33.
Right, just before Roosevelt came.
That would have been the 20s. But in any event, you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, Mark, because there's so little accurate information about the Depression. You know that after Franklin Roosevelt instituted the New Deal programs, there was a temporary period of a stimulation of the economy because the government was spreading a lot of money around. But then back in 1938-39, the economy collapsed again. Because in the long term, government programs cannot produce wealth. All they do is take resources away from the private sector. And the tremendous standard of living and prosperity we have in America today, it wasn't produced by government bureaucracy, Mark. It was produced by the private sector. All government bureaucracy can do is shuffle it around, move it around from here to there.
What the government
distribute it. They can't produce. What government bureaucracy produces wealth?
What the government can do is make. What the government can do is can make sure that the wealth that is created in America doesn't just go to a very few at the top, but allows everyone to take a share in it. And that's what government does, and that's what it's done since the Great Depression.
A country that was in terrible, dire poverty in the 1960s, and they instituted a lot of free market reforms, Adam Smith-type reforms, and they produced tremendous wealth in the course of a single generation throughout the population.
Jim, we've got to conclude the show, but I'll tell you this.
It benefits the whole population.
We have to conclude, but I'll tell you this. I do not believe in a pure socialist system. I think if you have pure socialism, you do need free market reforms. But I also don't believe in a pure capitalist system either. I think when you have pure capitalism, you end up in things like the Great Depression with a few very rich people, often, by the way, who are also fed off the trough of government. Because the rich used the government in the 20s and under George Bush They're using it today. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tomorrow we're going to have a discussion on Cindy Sheehan, the war mom who's taken on George Bush. Tune in then.
Born at 24 weeks and weighing just over 1 pound, little Timmy Kelly's premature